This week has been sponsored by Family Perlman on the first yahrzeit of their mother, Bas Yerochel, Bas Ephraim Meir, Arai HaShalom. Kof Ches Shvat, Tuesday the 21st of February, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, chapter and verse, part one.
Well, it's good to be back in the new premises. It's certainly an improvement. And well, thank the organisers for the invitation. In fact, the goyim for this particular shiur is a question which has been floating around Golders Green during the last few months, and that is, where did the sedras come from? Graham here has mentioned that specifically to me, but I have heard the question asked in various other places, and it went up as far as Diane Ehrentraum, who also suggested that it might be worth looking into. But before we look into the actual creation of the sedras, one's got to realise this is part of a much bigger picture. It's very similar to the boy who starts learning Shas and he learns his first two daf of Bar Mitzvah and he thinks, I've learnt Shas now. It's very similar here as well. The problems over the Torah start from the letters of the Aleph base. And you've got from the letters, you've got words, and you've got psukim, and then you've got all sorts of different definitions. And we really ought to have a quick look at each of these individual aspects, and then we will look at the sedras. Each of those aspects is fruit for many, many questions and many, many discussions, so we're not going to spend long time on that now. That was the reason why it was mentioned that it's part one, but there will be other parts in the future. Let's start, if you've got the sheet in front of you, those who've got it, you will see that the first thing I've quoted is the famous Gemara in Kedushin, which says that the Rishonim were Nikroim Sofrim. Why were the Chazal called Sofrim? Sofrim become now as, known as scribes, Sofrim making Sephorim. But why were they, did they call the, we call it Divrei Sofrim? And the Gemara answers, because Sofer is connected with counting, Mispar, or Lispoir means to count, like Sfira Sa'oima. And the original Talmidei Chachamim spent a lot of time counting individual letters and individual words, etc. And they worked out certain parts of the Torah. They found that the Vav of Gochon was the center for letters. They found that Darosh Darash was the center for words. And they found that Hiskarach was the center for Psukim. Now, as I said before, we're not going to deal with this today, but none of those make any logical sense, because they are nowhere near the middle of the Torah. Yet the Gemara says that they are at the middle of the Torah, so that has to be understood, what's going on. How on earth can Vgochon be in the centre of the Torah, when if you count up all the letters, it's about 1,000 letters out? That's just a topic which everybody knows about when they learn Kiddushin, and that is something hopefully one of these days we'll get to. But what we're seeing from the Gemara from our point of view is that everything is carefully delineated, where everything is carefully counted, everything is taken, has its proper position. Now, if you look at any Mikros Gedolos Chumash, and I've actually copied one from my Mikros Gedolos, it sets out there the list of how many psukim, how many of this and how many of that and how many of the other that are in Sefer Devarim, but then it goes on to count the whole of the Chumash. And if you look at my little list underneath that, you'll see that there are various terms mentioned. Psukim, Parshas, Storim, Prokim, Psuchosestumis, and then Tevos and Osios. Well, Osios we know, or we think we know what they are. They're the Chof Beis Osios of the Aleph Beis, and they've got the finals and so forth. We're not going into the topic of letters at the moment. That's for later. Then you've got words, tevos. There are rules as to how short, how long a word can be, and everybody knows the famous question, which is the longest word in Chumash, which is the longest word in Tanakh, and what its significance is. This is all about the words. Now, but then the letters and the words combine to make pesukim. I think we all know what a posuk is. They have the longest posuk and the shortest posuk, and there's the famous, very, very beautiful quiz question, where would you find a posuk which is longer than the longest and yet shorter than the longest twice? Well, that is a very interesting riddle. I'm not offering a prize for it. If anybody wants to know the answer, I'll tell them afterwards. I'll repeat that again. Where is a posuk which is longer than the longest, but shorter than the longest twice? Very interesting question. But that's to dealing with psukim. And how we count the psukim, I've mentioned here, you see in the Gemara, it tells us in one place 5,888 psukim. In the Gemara in Erevin, it tells us 8,888 psukim. And we know if we make a count, it's 5,845 psukim. Can you hear? Ha chamo. He standing for 5,000. Chamo is ches mem he is 5,845. That's just a remiss.
But a posuk would be something which has been decided by somebody else.
Quite right. But we are called posuk lo paske Moshe anan lo paskinon. In other words, the psukim have been established at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we can't start half a posuk. And the Tosfos asks, and when we say Halil, how can we say Anu Hashem Moshiyanu and stop? The whole posuk is twice. So how can you half that we say Anu Hashem Moshiyanu and everybody stops and we say it over again? How can you do such a thing? Tosfos and Sukkah ask the famous question. It should be, you should say the whole posuk at once. You can't divide things up. And there are many, many questions on that particular topic. But you're quite right. The psukim are settled by Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and those are the psukim that we've got. So how can there be three different counts? What's going on here? Well, as I said to you, every little topic has its own set of problems. In any case, 8888 is 3,000 out. So quite clearly there's something else going on behind the scenes. We're not going into that now. I'm just sort of opening the problem so that you can think about them, and maybe one of these days we'll get back to them. So what I'm saying is that certain things are givens from Sinai, the letters, the words, and the psukim were actually settled to sin. There are certain questions about certain words according to the Masorah, like Avreich, is that one word or is that two words? There are different Masorahs between Ben Naphtali and Ben Asher as to exactly how you divide these words up. That's also an interesting topic, and that to some extent will become relevant when we have a look at how many psukim or words are there in any particular sedra. But we haven't reached that yet. We're just building up from the letters, words, psukim. Now, having got psukim, you then have a number of psukim which gives you a Sefer Torah. But the Sefer Torah is divided up. Everybody knows that there's such a thing as psuchas and stumas. What they are is machlokas, Rambam, and Rosh. But we know briefly, when you look at the Chumash, you see there's a pay in certain places and a samach in other places. And we know that pay stands for psucha, the rest of the line is open, and stuma means there's nine letters, which is a gap. And that is psuchas and stumas, and they're counted, and they are probably the Achol Moshe Sinai. And if you haven't got your psuchas and stumas, the Sefer Torah would be possible. You can't just omit them. They're also counted, and that is a division. You could call them parshas if you like, but they're normally called psuchas and stumas. Every sedra that we have is divided by either a psucha or a stumma, with one exception, which we'll come to. But that division between the sedras is certainly not from Sinai. The psukim and stummas are from Sinai, but the sedra division is not, which is what we want to concentrate on in a second to find out what happened. Now, apart from the psukim and stummas, if you look at the Mikros Gedolos, he talks about other things. He talks about parshis, sedorim, and perokim. Now let's just define what these are meant. Of course, it's all semantics, but they're used in this particular context. Let's first of all get rid of the prokim. A perek is normally taken, as in Yiddish, to be called a capital. All of kapitlach, how you spell it, depends how you spell your Yiddish, and kapitlach are chapters in English. And we, in our chumashim, will refer to chapter lamed gimel posik dalet. Now, this is non-Jewish. It is not a Jewish concept, and that can be proved quite clearly from the very beginning of Bereishis. If you look at the chapters, the Vayichulu is separated. The Vayichulu is already the beginning of chapter 2. And that can't be, because we know Vayichulu Shemayim is completely tied up with the Bria. And therefore there was no way in the world that they would have separated Vayechulu from Yom HaShishi. And of course you've got the mnemonic Yom HaShishi Vayechulu HaShomayim, which gives you the Yud Kei Vav Kei. There's no way it would have been separate. And there's many proofs for this. What happened was, it came about with printing. Nobody knows of this chapter division before printing. You will not find it in any early manuscripts. It's only in printing, and it came about because it was convenient for the printers to do it this way, and it was pinched from the Vulgate, from the non-Jewish Pentateuchs, which they had, and they used that as an aid memoir. Now, what happened was very interesting. When Rabbi Menachem Kasher, who wrote his monumental Torah Shlema, he was very upset about this, and he wanted to bring back the original Torah chapters, which we're going to talk about in a second. And he started doing that, but he found that it was impossible, because people all over the place are referring to chapter Lamed Gimel Posik Dalet, chapter Chof Posik Hey, and nobody knew what he was talking about. It was completely impossible, because once printing took hold, it's vital to have some sort of identification system. So, for example, the Posik which has got all the Aleph base, it's very easy to remember, because it's chapter Tezayin, Posik Tezayin, 16:16. But that's a non-Jewish book. So if you're going to start calling that something completely different, nobody's going to know what you're talking about. So once printing has taken hold, it has to remain. So eventually, the Torah Shlema of Rabbi Menachem Kasher, he went back to the Kapitlach that we use. You can say that's what everybody uses, and we've got to follow that. He kept them, and he put the Torah ones in as well. So you've got both, but nobody refers to the chapter which is the true Torah authentic chapters. They use the Kapitlach all the time. Why that happened? I've got a theory as to why that came about, because nothing happens by accident. And if the whole world refers to non-Jewish chapters, there's got to be a tachlis and a purpose in that. Maybe one day, we've got more time, we'll discuss why it is that the chapters of which are non-Jewish origin took hold to such an extent that the Torah is now, every Chumash has got these chapters in it. So therefore, we can more or less discount Prokim, and if you have a look at the list of in the Mikros Gedolos, although it tells you the Prokim for each particular Chumash, it doesn't make a total at the end, which is significant. It gives you the totals of the psuchas and stomachs and totals of other things, but it significantly omits any reference to the total number of prokim, because it's irrelevant. It's not of any significance from a Jewish point of view. And so it is, if you look at the totals here, this is from the Sof Devarim, you'll see it refers to different things, but it does not tell you the total of prokim. Now that leaves us with two more things. Parshias and Sedorim, and that's what's going to be relevant to us. Sedorim means chapters in the Chumash which Chazal have sanctioned, and it could refer to things like the Parsha of Kehuna, the Parsha of the Mon. We've all heard of Parshas Hamon. Well, Parshas Hamon doesn't exist in our Chumashim. We have Parshas Beshalach. So what is Parshas Hamon? Well, of course, it's about the Mon. But there were Parshas which were different from our Parshas, and you'll find that the Midrashim which tell us that, for example, the Pasuk is V'ein Koineh in the end of the Tochacha, and the Midrash in the beginning of Megillas Esther, the Midrash Rabbah, the beginning of the Psichta to Esther, tells us from there we can learn that there must have been 155 Parshas in the Torah. 154, 155, that's one out in Gematria, is not the end of the world. How do you get there? Because Koineh is written without a Vav, and therefore it becomes Ein Konor, that there was no people learning the Torah in as a result of the Golus, and the 154, 155 Parshas were therefore neglected. That's one pshat. The other pshat in Ein Koineh is there was nobody who was able to be Koineh the letter Hey at the end. It should say Ein Koinim. It should have been, there are no people who are buying the Torah, well, that we're all buying, it should be Ein Koinim. Why does it say Ein Koineh? So the answer is that Konor Hey. There was nobody there to acquire the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. They're referring to Chamisha Chumshei Torah. But what we are seeing is that there were such things, which we now call Sedorim, which had 154. But there's another Medrash, which says, and I think it's the Rishami which says that in fact there are 175 Sedorim altogether. And I think it's mentioned here. Is it not? Is it mentioned here? Can't remember. Who is it? Is it mentioned? Can't remember. No, it tells you all the other things. Schum Psukim. No, before that. Minyan Pashas. No. I don't know whether it's actually mentioned here or not. I can't remember now. But there is definitely a medrash which says there's 175. Kaminyan Avrohom. And similarly, there's also a medrash which says that there are 147 chapters in Tehillim. Kaminyan Shnos Yaakov. In fact, we have 150, some say 151. We actually have 150 Tehillim, but there's definitely another text which says there are 147 to him, and that's because things like Hallelujah, which is only two psukim, get joined up with the next particular chapter. Okay, so what we have here is Sedorim, which might be 154 or 5, or 175, and that is a Torah division which was prevalent certainly in the Rishonim in certain places. However, we know that in fact our Chumash is not divided into 175 or 154, it's actually divided into either 53 or 54 Sedras. Why I say either Sedra? A simple Sedra counts to 54. Anybody can work it out very easily. However, we know that in the Zohar and in other places they keep talking about the Gan Sedras, Gan being 53 Sedras. Therefore, it seems that the mnemonic of 53 could be one out. I mean, as we said before, one out is not the end of it, but there was no need to be one out. Where you've got a posuk like Kono, you have to be one. I couldn't have said Konad, it wouldn't have fitted. So you have to be. But here, why do you have to be one out? You could have said Gam, would have been perfectly okay. Why do you have to say Gan? Well, you want to call about a Gan, it's very nice, etc. But it's not necessary to be one out. If it's one out, there's got to be some reason for it. And that brings us back to the question, where did this all begin? Now, there's one other division, which I haven't yet mentioned, which we take as a granted, and that is that the Torah is divided into five chumashim. Now, the Torah itself, we know from the Gemara in Baba Basra and in other places, that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu Mitzinai from beginning to end, and there's a whole discussion among the Tanoim as to what happened to the last eight psukim. Did Moshe write them b'dema, even though it hadn't happened yet, he was by almost Moshe. Moshe himself was told to write that down, and they're pshotting what dema means. Or did Yahushua actually finish off the Sefer Torah? But whichever way it is, we know that the Sefer Torah, which we've got, came to Moshe and Sinai, and they had it in the wilderness. But they didn't have sedras, that's definite. They had the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. But how do we know there was Chamisha Chumshei Torah? We know we've got a Bereishis, and we know that each one of the five books have got names, like Bereishis is called Sefer HaYosha, and Shmos is called Sefer HaGeula, and we know that we've got Mechilta on the Shmos, and Vayikra is called Torah's Koyanim, and we know that it's got the Sifro. So we know that we've got five chumash, nobody argues about that, but it's also understood that the Chamisha Chumshei Torah were also from Sinai. We see that from the Gemara in Megillah, which is coming up shortly for Purim, talks about how they were learning the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. What daf is it again? Daf Tesvov. Tesvov Mu'alaf, if you have a look there, it says Chamisha Chumshei Torah. But there's also another very interesting Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yudalad, which says, when the Apostle talks about the Sorei HaChamishim, Al Tikro Sorei Chamishim, Tikro Sorei Chumashim, Sorei Chumashim. The people who were appointed to be leaders weren't just physical, strong people that became officers over 50 people. No! Says the Gemara, they were officers over the Chumashim. They understood that Chumash inside out, the Sorei Chumashim. And another chat in the Gemara is the Sorei Chamishim they had learned for 50 years, or whatever it is, that Sorei Chamishim incorporates other things other than Chamishim, and it says there are Sorei Chumashim. So we know that there were Chamisha Chumshei Torah, that's a given, and that was at the time of Sinai. We also know from Mombar Bashar that between each Sefer you have to leave four lines. Like, normally you don't, a psukah goes on to the next line, but between the four sforim, between Bereishis and Shemos, you have four lines. And anybody who's learned the first Amud of Gittin will know that Tosa says that the 12 lines of a get represent the three divisions between the three chumashim. Everyone asks, what about between the if you've got five chumashim, you should have four divisions. So we should have 16 lines in a get. Why are there only 12? So the answer, because Devarim is Mishnah Torah. It's not very satisfactory, because it's part of the Chumash Torah. What's the pshat? So the Mephoshim do give pshatim as to why between Bamidbar and Devarim it wasn't appropriate to include it in the get. Because they say, for example, Bamidbar has the Pasha Sota, and the Pasha Get is in Devarim. Therefore, it wouldn't have been appropriate to include that particular one, two, and you only have the first three, which cause separation, because the separation, the idea of get is separation, and the four lines give a separation between the three chumashim, but between Bamidbar and Devarim, we're not going to include that separation because we've already been dealing with Sota and in Parshas Nosa and Get in Parshas Yisei. So that wasn't included. But the point I'm trying to make is you can see that the division into five chumashim is clearly made Sina. So we've got the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The question is, when and how did they subdivide these Chamisha Chumshei Torah? Because that's not mentioned in as such in the Chazal, and it clearly was not from Sinai. Where did it come from? And the answer seems to be quite clear, that what happened was that Klal Yisrael decided very early on, there was a Tekona, if Tekonas Moshe, Tekonas Ezra, that we should learn from the Torah Monday and Thursday, and we should learn every Shabbos, etc. So they decided, look, Torah Shebiksav is so important that we're going to have to finish it from time to time. We're going to have to make a Siyam, a Shas every 28 years, in some places, and every 7 years in other places. They make a Siyumim. And they decided that we're going to have to finish Chumash. However, there was a difference between the Eretz Yisrael and in Bovel. And what happened was this. The Eretz Yisrael decided, look, we better finish this off once every Shmitah. Every Shmitah, that's a time to finish, it's a good time, we need time, we can't rush through the Sedra. How many of us are able to concentrate on every Pasuk in the Sedra that we've got? It's too much to do in a week when you've got all these other things. So they decided, once every 3.5 years, we'll finish it. So we'll finish twice in 7 years. That's what they decided to do. How they came to that particular figure, they must have decided it takes about, if we divide it up into other parishes, it'll take about that amount of time. So what used to happen, they started off at Simchas Torah, and then they would finish at Pesach 3.5 years later, and then they would start again at Pesach, and they were finished by the Simchas Torah of the Shemitah. And that, therefore, divided the Torah into approximately, if you take 50 weeks in the year as approximation, because with Yom Tov, and with and then you've got, of course, the some years are leap years, and some years are not. It works out about 50 per annum. 3.5 times 50 is 175. So that's quite clear how you get your 175. And they put that onto Avraham Avinu because it's Kuf Ayin Hei Yuz, it's a good way of remembering it. And that was one thing. However, that was only a small group who did that, because the majority felt, look, if we're going to do this, we're not going to have a Simchas Torah. We're going to have a Pesach 1 year and a Simchas Torah. We're not going to have a proper Sim. We're not going to enjoy it so much. And of course, in part of Klal Yisrael to have a good Simcha, and everyone should know that Simchas Torah is a time for the Sim of the Torah. So they said, we can't do that. On the other hand, what are we going to do? So they decided we'll cut it down from 3.5 to 3 years. Because then we'll have a Simchas Torah every third year, and it'll be the same time every third year. And you won't have this problem of Pesach once. And therefore, if you take 3 years, that's 3 times 50, comes out at 150. So the extra 2 or 3 is for the leap years, etc. So they came to 154 parishes, probably they divided it in such a way. And that's what happened in most of the Eretz Yisrael areas. There was a 3-year cycle. That's what is normally known, the 3-year cycle. However, in certain places it was 3-year, although it's called a 3-year cycle, certain places had a 3.5-year cycle, but they didn't bother mentioning the half year because it wasn't necessary. So you have two Masoiras, both in Eretz Yisrael, and the areas which were dealt with by the Yerushalmi, etc., where you have 155, and you've got 154.
Sorry?
Schmitty, interesting question, what happened during the Schmitty year? I don't know. The answer is I don't know what happened, whether it may be that they did a Chazorah, because remember during Schmitty year, nobody was working. So maybe they learnt Shas during that year, or maybe they did the whole Torah in 1 year, because it was... It's a good question. I don't know the answer. I don't know whether or not the 3 years just carried on and Lav Davka Shmita. If it's 3.5 years, it clearly was Shmita. If it's 3 years, it could be it was not every. It was Shmita only every time it came around. Probably. I can't give you the answer to that. I don't know. I wasn't there. Now, where are we? Oh, so now. However, in Bovel, it wasn't like that. Bovel decided, look, 3 years is too long. We need to finish the Torah every year. So in Bovel, what happened was, they decided we'd better have a division of the Torah, which will be able enable us to finish it in 1 year. So therefore it came about that in Bovel, around about the time of the when the Midrashim and were being established, they decided that there, we don't know exactly the exact date, but it was clearly around at that time that they decided to make sedras. Now we call those parshias, we call the parsha sheet a parsha, but we normally know parshias as sedras. We've got to be careful about the nomenclature because the words can are interchangeable. What I've been calling before sedorim is really the Yerushalmi division of the Torah into either 175 or 154. That's known as Sidorim. But we in fact call our parasha Sidras as well. They're called Sidras. It's just a question of what wording you use. Because if you're comparing one with the other, you're going to have a difference. But if you're not comparing, it doesn't matter. A parasha or a Sidra is the same thing. As long as you know what you're talking about. So now, we've called the Sidorim, which are mentioned in the, Mikras Kedoshim, etc. That's relating to the Yerushalmi's 175 or 154 parashas. And that might include Parashas Hamon, it might include Parashas Koyarim, it might Parashas Hamoadim, items which were completed in themselves, but not a full seder, because after all, you've got to divide it into, each seder is going to have to be divided into three different parts. However, we, our sedras, or parashas, which we have, they come from above. Now we know from Shas that they existed in Shas. I've given you some references here where we see quite clearly that they in that Tetzaveh is actually mentioned in Shas somewhere. Have I written it down? Yeah, here we are. A number Dalet. Tetzaveh is in Megillah Daf Chof Tes. Acharimos is in Gittin Samach. Kedoshim is mentioned in Zevachim. So we know clearly that there were parashas in the Shas. They had them. And remember, the Shas is Bavli. Not in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi you won't find this. Yerushalmi you'll find the other parashas. But in the Bavli you will find the reference to the names of sedras. How did they get their names? Well, that's very simple. They took usually the first word or the first relevant word in order to... That's not difficult. So we've got questions why Bolok is called Bolok and so forth. Well, that they all ask how it came about that we use a Rosh or Koyrach is called Koyrach. But, and Vayero is Vayero, but normally it's the first word or the first relevant word which comes in, or Bamidbar. In time of Shas, in time of Rashi, it wasn't called Bamidbar, it was called Vayedaber. Sefer Bamidbar was called Sefer Vayedaber, because that was the first word. We now call it Bamidbar, and there's a whole Netziv and the Hakdama explaining why they changed from Bamidbar to Vayedaber to Bamidbar. Okay, but that's names. But the actual sedras are actually referred to in Shas. More than that, if you look at the Midrashim, Medrash Rabbah was not meant to be learnt each week on the sedra. And they divided the Midrashim. If you look at Medrash Rabbah or Medrash Tanachum, it follows the sedras. It follows sedra by sedra. You have Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Mikesa, whatever it might be. Because these Midrashim, which came from the originally from the Tanom, the Amorim, the Midrashim were at different ages. Some are older than others, some are younger than others, the Midrashim. But eventually they were put together as a set of Midrashim that then took on the Sedra form. However, the Pesichta, which is a form of Midrash, which comes from Eretz Yisrael, from the Yerushalmi, doesn't follow the Seders, because they didn't have Seders. That follows Parashias, the Parashias which the Yerushalmi had. So what we're seeing here is those Medrashim which came from Bovel were fitted in with Seders, and those Medrashim which came from Eretz Yisrael, they had the Parashias which we talked about before. So the Seders therefore were clearly fixed sometime around about the Shas would have been a couple of thousand years ago. They've got quite a venerable antiquity. It's not just a modern invention like the chapters in the Kapitlach we talked about. They go back a long way, but they don't go back to Sinai. They don't go back that far. Now, there are certain halachas which are relevant to Parshas, which you might be quite surprising. For example, if you miss Kriyas HaTorah 1 week in the shul, what do you do? Well, the halach is that the next week you lay in the seder of the week plus the seder of the previous week. But you don't go back 2 weeks. You only go back 1 week. So, for example, if this week, for some reason, let's hope there will be a Kriyas HaTorah this week. But if, for example, you missed out Parshas Mishpatim last week, so this week you may lay in Mishpatim and Terumah. And if you missed out, for some reason, there was no Sefer Torah, and you didn't say Yisra Mishpatim for the last 2 weeks, next week, at this Truma, you'll only say Mishpatim, you will not go over and say Yisra. It's true, you personally should say Yishnai Mikra, and you have to finish the whole Chumash by Simchas Torah. But, as far as the Tzibur is concerned, the Seders have that relevance. And of course the relevance is what we lay in each week. We lay in this particular Parsha. I'd like just to finish off this on this occasion as to try and find out why we have 54 Sedras when in fact that we only have Gan Sedras. Now, bearing in mind what we've said is that we have to have 54 Sedras because in case there is a leap year, then you're going to have, it is Shire to have every single Sedra separate. Nearly always there's one or two which are together. In some Vayelik's very usually together. Very often there, but it can be when Pesach falls on a Sunday, which is again not very frequent. It happens every so. It has happened a few times recently, but it can be hundreds of years before it happens. Then you will end up with every single Sedra being separate, and that's why you had to have so many Sedras. It's obvious why they had to do it. You know, you can't go around dividing up Mishpatim into two because we haven't got enough Sedras this year. So they had to make enough Sedras. So they made 54 Sedras. In fact, they only needed 53. But we count 54. And the shail is, where did we lose a Sedra? Oh, so according to the way I'm explaining it at the moment, it makes jolly good sense, because in Chutz La'aretz, the Zeres HaBrocha can never be laid on a Shabbos. So when it says we have 54 Sedras, that's true. But when it says there are Gan Sedras, remember the purpose of the Gan Sedras was in order that we should all be able to lay in the whole of Chumash. Therefore, they counted 53 because the Zeres HaBrocha was always on a separate. It wasn't on a Shabbos. It wasn't part of the parasha. Now, if you look in the sheet, I've given you certain other answers to this. The Mefarshim do talk about it. Some say that some Vayelech is really one Sedra, not two Sedras. And there's a big proof for that from the Masorah at the end. That's another thing we haven't even touched upon yet. At the end of each Sedra there's a Masorah which goes back about 1,000 or 1,100 years. And then there were many, many different Masorahs of this sort because everyone counted the number of Psukim in the Chumash. And what happened was at the end of Nitzavim it says it's 40, but at the end of Vayelech it says it's 70. But we know there's only 30 Psukim in Vayelech, so how can it say there's 70 Psukim in Vayelech? Elamai, the first Masorah is telling us that they were separate, with only 40 for Nitzavim, but the second Masorah is saying, no, Nitzavim is one Sedra. And therefore, it could be that if Nitzavim is really one Sedra, which we have to divide up in order to, for the various reasons why we have to do it, that would explain that we really only are 53 Sedras, because Nitzavim is only one Sedra. What's the Nafkamina? There's two brilliant Nafkaminas between Nitzavim and Vayelech. One Nafkamina is, it's late now. Let me finish up with this nafkah, it's worth hearing. One nafkah is what I just said before. What would happen if you missed out Nitzavim and Vayelech, right, and it came to Parshas Hazinah? What do you lain? Because if you've got a double Sedra, you can only lend the last seder. You can't lend both. So it you would have to lend Vayelech and Hazinu. But if you say Nitzon Vayelech is really one seder, you lend Nitzon and Vayelech and Hazinu. But if, for example, Matas Masay, you got missed out, you come to Devorim, you wouldn't learn Matas, you'd only learn Masay and Devorim. But if Nitzon Vayelech is one, you have to do both, and that's one brilliant Nafkamina. The second Nafkamina is a Maiseh Shehoyo in Sandal Besamedrish. A cousin of mine was Bar Mitzvah Parshas Nitzavim Vayelech. And in those days, you didn't just call up seven people, you called every member of the Mishpacha, otherwise it would be terribly insulted. But in Nitzavim Vayelech, you've got very, very few extra places you can add. Certainly, in Vayelech, you can add about one or two people maximum. So, but the problem is, if Nitzavim Vayelech come together, you can't call anybody up in the first sedra. That's the halacha. You have to have the first three aliyahs in the first sedra, and shlishi to revi has got to be in the revi chamishi. Thank you very much. Someone's still listening. Revi to chamishi has got to be in the second sedra, and in the first sedra you can't have any asofas. So they went to the rov, Rabbi Blad Zichron Levracha. At that time, I was 11 years old at the time, and they asked Rebbe, can we make any asofas in Nitzavim? Because we've got all the Kavodat Tzibur, we've got all these people who are going to be upset if they can't have an aliyah. And he passed him the code. Because there is a shitta that Nitzavim Vayelech is one sedra. If it's one sedra, you can have as many asofas as you like in the first sedra. Because it's all one sedra. He passed him la halacha that time. I don't know the basis of the psak, but the psak was you can, in Nitzavim Vayelech, it's different from the other double sedras, and you can count, you could include and call people up even if a Maaseh Shehoyo 50 years ago. With, sorry? 60 years ago. it was a long time ago. Right. So what I'm saying here is that the sedras now have a toikef. They have halachas which are attached to them because of time. It often is like that. But they're not from Sinai, and we now know where the sedras came in and how they got to where they are. We'll have to stop now. Mr. Shem will continue with the subject on another occasion.
Okay. Sounds like